If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11:30, or 11, excuse me. And then today is the Thursday edition. We got more room. We got more people in our broadcast room here than I think we've ever had. And it's not even election season. So anyway, we're going to talk about ethics today. I'll get you caught up on what we're going to discuss. Yeah, ethics is still a thing. You know, it's hard to believe with what we're seeing in the news. I actually got a trial coming up in July on the pay-to-play corruption issues here in the capital city. And it's amazing over the last 10 years, the things that have happened with the independent referendum that was voted in to establish the ethics board. And I've always been a proponent of that, actually helped get it approved. There's been a lot of stops and starts, but I think that overall it is really, you know, raised the bar, forced people to answer questions. And is as you create any new office, there's growing pains. And some of that has, I think, already been sort of, you know, water under the bridge in the past, and they're moving forward. And so we're going to talk about where they are, a couple of major items that they're trying to, the ethics board, that is, or the ethics advocates, I should say, too, that are trying to get done. And always happy to talk about that. And so we're going to talk about it in two 10-minute segments, and we'll bring some guests in here live. And I can't tell you, you know, the advocates for the ethics board, they attend these monthly meetings that don't get a lot of coverage, but they have been very consistent at being there, and I think that has really helped out the process. So anyway, I'm just very happy to have them here, and we'll talk about that. I wanted to touch on a couple of issues before we get into that. Obviously, breaking news in terms of the Florida Department of Education releasing FSA assessments. And you might say, oh, that was pretty quick in terms of getting these test scores out, and also understanding that we've had the pandemic. But, you know, they released the test for 2021, and as you may or may not know, in 2020 they didn't do FSA scores. But as an engineer and someone who is you know, does journalism based on reports and documents, you know, I like to look at these numbers. And I know sometimes we get criticized for these tests in schools in terms of putting too much pressure on kids. But I mean, here we're talking about a basic test, though, a third grade level test where you're just testing reading proficiency. And, you know, TalisReports.com, we have a story up now on the on Leon County's results. And a couple things to note here. First of all, I don't think there's a surprise that there was going to be a drop in the reading proficiency given what happened with the pandemic. So when you go look at the 67 counties, you'll see that Leon County's drop from 2019 to 2021 was about 7% in terms of the number of students that are reading at or above grade level. For the statewide, that number was 4%. So we were almost double in terms of the drop that we had in terms of reading proficiency. Again, I don't know that you can get a lot out of that. The FDOE press release was quick to laud the impact of in-person instruction. They had enough or a big enough sample to look at school districts that had in-person instruction, and they obviously did, or the numbers show that where you had in-person instruction, the results were better. I think in Leon County had a lot of in-person instruction, and there was obviously a choice for you to do school at home. But I think the bigger story for Tallahassee is if you look at our report, we've got 29 elementary schools here in Leon County, and then we've got the Florida State University School, which is not run by the Leon County School Board, but I always include it in anything we write about because I always get comments about why aren't you including Florida State University School. So we've got 30 elementary schools, and I think some of the numbers are a little bit eye-opening in the sense that, you know, we had 54% of our students in third grade demonstrating a reading proficiency at or above grade level. So to me, it doesn't seem like a really good number. The state average was 54%. And so that means that 46% of third grade students are reading below grade level. And now if you look at that in terms of a ranking in how the county ranked in the state of Florida, we rank 31st. So in other words, a 54% proficiency level puts you at 31st in the state out of 67 counties. Again, I think that appears to be a little low, given, you know, you always hear a lot about how Leon County's the education of our citizenry is pretty high. We're home to, you know, two college institutions, university institutions, and you know, pretty robust community college. And so this is an issue that I think is something we're going to have to really challenge ourselves to deal with. And, you know, with the Children's Services Council meeting to address, you know, now to try to figure out what needs need to be addressed. I mean, basic reading beyond, I guess, you know, poverty or food insecurity has got to be one of the top ones. And I think this coming out while the Children's Service Council just appointed their needs assessment committee, I think might be something that will garnish some attention. But, you know, the other part of this that, you know, I hate to say it's not good news, but it sort of reinforces something that we've known about here in Leon County, is the both the economic and geographical segregation of these results. You know, the Title I schools, and we're talking about elementary schools now, are clearly, you know, if you look at a map, they're on the south side of Tallahassee, south side of Leon County. And obviously this is from a demographic standpoint, is where most of the minorities go to school. And, you know, there's been this, again, I'm not breaking news here. I mean, there's been national reports about some of the economic segregation in Leon County. And so, you know, we see this again showing up in you know, the scores in these schools. So at what point does this, you know, you keep taking Title I money, say for over the last 10 years, and you're not seeing a lot of improvement. And so I think it's definitely going to be something that we have to wrestle with. Now, the Children's Services Council had a meeting last week, and I want to get into that a little bit, but I'm probably not going to be able to finish up, and we will have to finish up in the last segment on that. But what I wanted to tell you about is they are into about their third or fourth meeting. The Children's Services Council, which was approved a lot like the Independent Ethics Board, was approved by a referendum to allow this group to levy a tax. And the Florida state law gives a cap of a 0.5 mil, which would be about $10 or $11 million. But what the Children's Service Council is doing now is getting their infrastructure set up. They won't be getting the money until probably December of this year, but they went ahead and took a vote on establishing the millage rate. And it's going to be more money than they thought a year ago because of the major increase of property values that we're seeing. And this is, you know, this is what happens when you start adding new property taxes for different things. You know, I understand we've got the, although Blueprint is a sales tax, which is made more based on consumption and how the economy is going. A property tax, you know, it's interesting. I would argue that, you know, our incomes have not really increased that much due to the pandemic, but our property values are going up. So people are going to feel this in the pocketbook, some more than others. But what we'll do when we get back in the last segment, after we get done talking about ethics, is we'll get you up to date on the Children's Services Council. But when we get back, we're going to turn to the Ethics Board and get some information out about what they're trying to do with regards to lobbyist information, and also the role of the Inspector General and how that might butt up against what the Ethics Board is trying to do from a structural perspective. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. And bear with us. We got a lot of guests here, and I'm trying to be traffic cop here, but I wanted to get some important information out in regards to the ethics board. And the ethics board was established through a referendum, and won't go into the total history here. It was very, very much needed, as I think events have really shown. So now what has happened is we've got the ethics board in place, and as with any government committee or entity, there's struggles. You got to work out compromises. You got to try to get things done. And it's, you know, nobody is a dictator or the president that can just say, hey, we got to do this. You got to get consensus. And so there's been some challenges. So we want to talk about some of those challenges. And with us today for this segment is Ben Wilcox, who's the research director of Integrity Florida, which is part of an ethics group around the state. You see him quoted in newspapers from time to time about different issues. Also, we have Richard Herring, who is a former chair of the ethics board and an original member of the ethics board when it started. So I know he has a lot of stories he could tell, probably not on the air, but we will get to those. So I want to turn to Mr. Wilcox. The issue that we want to talk about is lobbyist registration and how you deal with lobbyists. That has come out in this FBI investigation as a major issue in terms of lobbyists being involved with this. So we're trying to regulate them. Why don't you bring our listeners up to speed on exactly, you know, what we're trying to do through the ethics board?
Well, thanks for having us here today, Steve. Well,
thanks for coming in.
Well, the city's independent ethics board was, as you said, created in 2014, and part of its responsibility under the charter amendment is to recommend changes to local laws, ordinances that relate to ethics and good government. So the ethics board has been looking at the issue of lobbyist registration, and as you said, you know, the problem that they have identified is that there are people who are undertaking lobbying activities or what look to be lobbying activities, but they're not registering as lobbyists under the city's current ordinance.
And the problem becomes the definition, because I've been through this because you call yourself, I'm not a lobbyist, I'm a consultant, or something like that. So how is that being dealt with?
Well, the current definition is, we've described it as being circular, in that it says, lobbyist means a person who is employed and receives payment or who contracts economic consideration for the purpose of lobbying. So it kind of locks in, you have to consider yourself a lobbyist to register as a lobbyist. So there's a loophole in that definition that allows people, as you say, to call themselves, well, I'm not a lobbyist, I'm a consultant, you know, so I don't need to register. And so what we're seeing are, you know, now reports of people who are essentially acting as lobbyists but aren't registering.
And so this is what the new ordinance is, or the recommended ordinance from the ethics board is trying to address.
Yes. The three ordinances include an ordinance that creates a new definition of lobbyists that we believe will capture these unregistered lobbyists.
All right, and before I move to Mr. Herring, so is there a government entity out there in Florida or the state that has a good definition of a lobbyist?
Well, there are a lot of definitions of lobbyists out there, but we believe that what the ethics board has crafted here as far as a new definition of lobbyists will include these people who are acting as lobbyists but not registering.
Okay, Mr. Herring, turning to you, and pull your microphone up there as close as you can. There you go. So now we've got this, the ethics board's crafting this ordinance, which I guess you were probably involved with when you were on the board. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, and so what's the process now that you've crafted? You've got everybody on board. You've got a consensus of what the definition is and of these three different ordinances. So now you've sent them to the city to consider, to go from there.
Right. It's a series of proposals that the ethics board has submitted to the city commission. And they basically contain seven items. The first is the broader definition of lobbyist, and it very much tracks the state law. So if you're going to lobby the governor or the executive agencies, you're going to lobby the legislature. The statute says lobbying means seeking on behalf of another person to influence an agency with respect to a decision the agency is going to make in the area of public policy or procurement, or attempting to obtain the goodwill of the agency. So what the Ethics Board has proposed is something that is very much in line with that. So it doesn't matter what you call yourself. It matters what you're doing, that you are attempting, you're getting paid to get government to spend the public dollar in the way that your employer wants the government to spend the money.
Right, so a consultant would have to register if that's what they were doing.
Right, a university president, for instance, when they come talk to the legislature, they have to register as lobbyists because they're there lobbying for their university, even though that's not their job to lobby.
Right, and so so that was one of the issues. What's another one of the issues that's involved in the ordinances?
Then the next big thing is to get the lobbyists to register, including what specific issues or ordinances they're lobbying on, and to keep a log of who they talk to and when they talk to, so you can actually track and see, okay, this person managed to meet with every city commissioner and every appointed official, or they met with these high-ranking city employees who are able to make decisions. And it also prohibits contingency fees. So you can't agree to get paid only if you get the city to do what your employer wants them to do. That the state law prohibits that because it looks too much like pay-to-play. Which we know about, and then it would require the city to maintain a website and put all this information out on the website.
Well, when was this set? So to understand the process here, the Ethics Board, it was established through a referendum, but to get things in ordinances, they can only make recommendations to the city. The city is the one that has to approve the ordinances. So this, where are we in that process? The city has these recommended ordinances?
Yes, the Ethics Board, back several years ago, decided that when they made recommendations, they would actually draft ordinances. So they've sent the city a couple of different ordinances, because there's some timing aspects to all of this, and proposed very precise language and then given them a justification for each one of the changes. That was all submitted about a month ago. We developed it all through 2020. The initial discussions go back to January of 2020, actually some prior to that, but all through 2020, the Ethics Board struggled with this to get the exact language right and make sure everything was in the best interest of the citizens of the city.
So what would be the next step for the city then? Is to bring up the notice the ordinance or have a workshop or...
Yeah, we would hope that they would have a workshop and allow some public input, because certainly people may have better ideas or ways to improve it or strengthen it. And then the city, obviously, if they're going to do this by ordinance, they need to make it their own. And they need it will be their product. So they need to make sure that they're absolutely 100% comfortable with it. The Ethics Board is comfortable with it.
So have they been in contact? Have they given any feedback to what they think about the ordinances at this point, or has it just been sitting with the city and there's really been no movement yet?
As far as I know, there's been no feedback from the city. They've only had this officially for about a month.
Right. So yeah, that's it. And so, what would you expect? Would you expect, Ben, for them to deal with this before the year's out?
I would hope so. We think there's a sense of urgency about this, that we would like it to be taken up and considered and put people on record of whether they support more transparency in the lobbying process.
Well, I would assume that would be part of the advocates. You guys are continually calling them and asking them what the status is. I would think that it's probably not bad marketing that you've got a pay-to-play trial coming up
exactly
in July 12th, so that would be something to deal with. Now, when we get back, we're going to bring in another person into the discussion, and it flows like this. So, we've got this ordinance before the city commission, and now we also have just had the recent development or the recent addition to an office called the Inspector General. So we want to get a sort of idea of all how this all is going to work together, and we're going to try to do that in 10 minutes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on the Thursday edition. We're going to get right back into the ethics. To set this up, we've talked about trying to get a definition of a lobbyist so you can force people to register. And we want them to register because we want to know the people that are trying to influence the decisions of elected officials. And so now the Ethics Board has got some ordinances that are sitting at the with the City Commission for them to consider, and we'll see where that goes. They've only had them about a month. But now I want to bring on Peter Butzine, and I don't have your title. Peter, what's your title?
Retired and happy.
Retired? Oh, I don't know about that.
But I'm on the Citizens for Ethics Reform Coalition, and I represent Common Cause.
Okay, so it's an ethics advocate.
As a volunteer.
Right. Yes. And so what we wanted to have you wanted to discuss, we've got this new position. It was created, went through the public hearing process, and it's a little intellectual academic-y, the inspector general, but they've created this new position. But this is after the ethics board has been created, obviously was there. Talk a little bit about that and how you think they may work together.
Sure. We didn't have any problem with the creation of the inspector general's office. Our issue was that it appeared to be that particularly Mayor Daley was kind of out to somewhat undercut the ethics board by creating this office of inspector general. And our only problem with that office is that the inspector general is not truly independent. The ethics board is the independent ethics board, so it is independent. And we have felt that whistleblower protection should be extended to the ethics board, independent ethics board, in its ability to provide whistleblower protection for city employees who bring complaints against their city officers.
Yeah, and now when you use the word independent, I want to make sure our listeners understand this. The inspector general is hired by city commissioners.
That's correct.
The auditor.
Actually, by the city manager.
No, is that true? Is the inspector general hired by the city manager or the city commission?
Yes, city manager.
So the auditor is hired by the city commission.
Exactly. Yeah. So the auditor, the independent, all these people are hired by the city manager.
Right.
The commission only has the opportunity to say yes or no.
Now that's not like that. The city attorney goes directly to the city commission. The city attorney does report to the city commission.
Okay.
That's
correct.
But yes. The point of independence is this, is that the independent ethics board doesn't answer to the city commission at all. In terms of they can't fire,
correct.
They don't have any, they have
correct.
One appointment to the board.
And
so that's when you're talking about independence. And so when you say what is the inspector general looking to do that the ethics board couldn't do?
Well, that's maybe the $64,000 question. Now, admittedly, the inspector general has audit functions. Indeed, the current inspector general isn't this auditor and is a certified public accountant. So they can delve deeply into areas that involve audits, involve monetary transactions and that sort of thing. And that's why we weren't against the establishment of the Office of the Inspector General. But the problem is, let's say that somebody, an employee, has a complaint, ethics complaint against the city manager.
Right.
Is that employee really going to be offered whistleblower protection by the inspector general who is hired by the city manager?
Right.
So that's where we question the independence. There is no true independence from the office of the inspector general.
So, Mr. Herring, let me turn to you real quick, because you were, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you were the chairman of the board when they were doing the inspection, chairman of the independent ethics board when the city commission was in the process of developing this new position with inspector general. Was there any communication between the city commission and the independent ethics board about what the responsibilities would be, or were you pretty much just left out on an island and they were doing what they wanted to do?
No, they did that on their own. We tried to have some input, and we certainly talked to the current auditor. He was very good about coming and talking to us because he was doing a lot of the drafting, but that was a product of the city commission.
Right. And so So now, where are we with the Inspector General and their relationship with the Independent Ethics Board? Because they're up and running now. The Inspector General is up and running.
Yeah. There is no formal relationship. However, the Inspector General recently gave his audit report comparing the ethical culture of Tallahassee between 2008 and 2019. And so that report was given to the Independent Ethics Board. It's interesting to me that Dennis Sutton, who is the Inspector General, and I appreciate the report, and I was pleasantly surprised by the depth of that report. But with that said, he kind of summarized the report as saying, essentially, well, everything's pretty good. You know, we're doing pretty well. He made the most important recommendation he made was that the whistleblower protection needs to be further codified, and we support that. However, if you look at the answers to the specific questions that were asked, we've actually backslid in this area of the ethical culture of Tallahassee. For instance, and the best example of this is, the city employees were asked in 2019, are you personally aware of misconduct, illegal behavior, or ethical behavior? And 75% responded no, but then asked, would you feel comfortable reporting unethical behavior to your supervisor? 75% said yes, they would be uncomfortable reporting that. So that shows that there is still a big problem. If employees don't feel that they can come forward with examples of unethical behavior or even felonious behavior, then we say there is a continuing ethics problem in the city of Tallahassee.
And so your point would be that, given that response to that question, the independence is very important. And so that's where the ethics board would come in and be different than the inspector general.
Exactly.
Is that if you're going to address, one of the ways to address this alarming finding in the audit, from your point of view, is to route them to the independent ethics board.
Correct. And I would also say that the city attorney just goes ballistic at the thought of the ethics board independently initiating complaints. And the reason that the independent ethics board has to independently initiate complaints is because what public employees are going to go before their managers to say to report unethical behavior. And so the only way that we're going to reduce this problem of initiating unsworn complaints is to give whistleblower protection powers to the independent ethics board.
So the perfect process would be someone who would anonymously go to the ethics board and then with a complaint, and then the ethics board would be able to initiate that complaint.
Correct.
And I think, did you, Mr. Herring, did you not initiate a complaint as the chairman? I thought I remembered, or you just thought about doing that because of this issue.
Yes, we had we were getting a lot of calls on the hotline from people who said, I have good information about serious problems, but I'm not willing to give my name. And so what we did was we would look at those, and we actually adopted a policy that said, if the board looks at the issue and thinks there's enough there to investigate it further, but the person won't make a formal written complaint, that the chair can sign off and file the complaint so that the board can actually look at what appears to be a serious ethical issue. And I did a couple of those.
Yeah, and so, you know, and this is the issue that we run through statewide, too, because you have this Florida Commission on Ethics, and you could have all these things that, you know, the journalists can write about, people can understand about it, but nothing gets investigated unless someone puts their name on a complaint and files it. And people aren't just chomping at the bit to have, you know, to be written up as someone who is filing an ethics complaint.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so where are we? So where are we on this issue? So can the board still initiate these complaints on their own?
Yes, the board has been and continues to initiate complaints when they've got good information that comes in from anonymous sources, people who aren't willing for personal reasons to you know, put their name on something because they fear for their job or their employment. But we think that the whole idea of whistleblower, the statute says that at the local government level, an employee should be able to file a complaint about misuse of public funds with the chief executive officer, which would be the city manager, or an appropriate local official. And the courts have, and the attorney general have looked at that and said an appropriate local official can be an ethics board. They looked at that for City of Miami, for the for Palm Beach County, for the town of Longboat Key, and said that's all fine. And in one case, actually, a local government authority, the Hillsborough Transit Authority, actually, without the county commission saying that they could offer whistleblower protection, the transit authority just said, we're going to offer whistleblower protection. And their attorney wrote to the attorney general and asked for a formal opinion and said, gee, can we do this? And the attorney general said, sure, you can do that. You're an appropriate official.
So to summarize, before I have one last question, is that the two major issues appear to be lobbyists, registering of lobbyists, who's going to do that, and who's going to track it and try to follow up on it, and then the whistleblower status. Those are the things, those are the two biggies that are in these ordinances that are sitting with the city commission to be acted on.
Well, whistleblower's not in the ordinances that the board has proposed. The board is still struggling with that. But their position, I think, has been that they would like the city commission to officially say that they can offer whistleblower protection.
Okay. Now, another question, and I have to tell you this, is we haven't rehearsed this, so they may not know the answer. But one of the things that I've seen in reporting over the last year is that there's been some complaints against a couple of elected officials, and they go out and hire lawyers. And then they start recovering attorneys' fees. Is there any language that says that there's a certain time in the process? Because, you know, if you file a complaint that does not have legal standing, there should be a line there that, look, we're not going to pay any attorney fees until we determine that there's legal standing. Is there anything that regulates that now with the Independent Ethics Board?
No, there isn't. And you've raised a really good issue. We think in the very least that there should be no legal fees recovered for city commissioners or anybody who has to defend themselves against a charge until legal sufficiency is found, much less probable cause.
So it goes legal sufficiency, then probable cause. Well, let me ask you this. I think there's been two, and I don't remember the officials' names. They were city commissioners. Did they, either one of them, reach legal sufficiency?
No.
See, That ticks me off sitting here right now.
Well, our coalition, this, and we're not speaking for the Independent Ethics Board, but our coalition wonders if some commissioners may be trying to interject public opinion against the whole ethics process by getting these, by, you know, loading, lawyering up, spending big amounts of money before legal sufficiency is even found. And that is not an issue, unfortunately, for the Independent Ethics Board, but it is one that I hope we can take to the city commission.
So let me ask you this. So at the state level, with the Florida Commission on Ethics, you can recover legal fees, I guess. Does anybody know if there's a line, is there delineation when you can start to recovering legal fees?
I'm not aware that at the state level, if I'm I work in the executive branch and there's an ethics complaint filed against me and I go through the process and it ultimately gets dismissed, I'm not aware that I can go back to my employer and get them to reimburse my legal fees.
Okay.
I've not seen that happen.
Okay, it may have to be a separate filing or something to get the legal fees back. Now, I think you're right on this, Peter. I think this is an issue that, because I know that we've reported on this, that I think in Tosh Reports we've written up both of those. I think it was $5,000 or $6,000 in legal fees. I mean, if you really take a cynic's view of this, it is a way to turn people's perception against the ethics process if it's going to cost the money. Especially, I mean, it's one thing if you got legal sufficiency and you're going to go to a hearing, but it's another if it doesn't get there and they're just hiring lawyers right off the bat. So anyway, all right. Well, listen, that's all the time we have. I appreciate you joining us. I think, again, these are weedy issues, but I just want to reiterate this: the people, the city of Tallahassee, overwhelmingly voted for an ethics board, and so now that we have it, we got to keep moving forward and getting through the challenges and the obstacles. And so, again, I appreciate you joining me today.
All right, thank you.
All right. When we get back, we'll turn our attention to some things local here. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back after this break.
Thank you.
it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here. I feel like I've been working for 2 or 3 hours. It's, you know, it's amazing to do this show, and when I'm by myself and I've got Bobby there, it, you know, you only have to worry about yourself. But when you have three guests all of a sudden, I'm good at dealing with one guest.
Three, talk about me over here. I'm perfect at dealing when you have one guest. You told me it was going to be two today, and three of them walked in here. I'm like, oh, we got to get an extra mic somewhere.
I know. So anyway, I hope the listeners, and I think you did get something out of this, and I wanted to sort of recap it a little bit in our remaining moments here. So, look, the Independent Ethics Board came out of a time in the city's history where we were dealing with some corruption. And, you know, actually it was came into be before the FBI was even involved, but it was very, I think, indicative of the problems that we were having. So now, you know, we're operating in an atmosphere where there's a lot of push and pull between what the Independent Ethics Board can do. And what you're hearing now, I think, is good news in the sense that we're starting to push up against some of the special interest. And look, people have the right to lobby their government. They have the right to ask their elected officials to do something for them. There's no problem with that. But what we want to try to do is make it as transparent as possible. And so the issue here is lobbyist registration, which I've been talking about for the last 10 years. Actually, Bobby, this is back probably when you were in middle school. When I ran for office in 2010, the city didn't register lobbyists. And that was one of my planks in my platform. And so 10 years ago, where were you, Bobby, 10 years ago?
I was actually in middle school.
See, that's right. Pretty good.
I think that was my last year of middle school. And I didn't even know that you ran for office when I was in middle school, because I see the signs behind me and I'm like, this must have been right before I moved here.
That's funny. But so the point now is we're trying to get a handle on registering lobbyists, and the whistleblower is an issue, obviously. Independence is always an issue when you're dealing with ethics. But what the Ethics Board has done, and they've had their own issues over the last few years with the executive directors in and out and trying to get the right formula, is I think now, you know, they're moving forward, but now they're getting a little bit more pushback from the city, which I think is normal again, because you're going to have this creative tension of back and forth, you know, wanting more regulation, less regulation. You don't want to put people in bad positions, but I think this is good for the community, and I probably don't talk about it enough. I'm glad that they came in, and I'll continue to follow up with this, because, you know, the point of independence is nobody is going to, you know, report anything within the city without some privacy issues, privacy protection, and that's what they want with the Ethics Board. They want to be able to do that. And then the lobbyist registration is something that is just, you know, it's a must in terms of how we're going to deal with this. And the city's come a long way in 10 years of dealing with it, but there's still some loopholes that they're trying to close. Now, so it will be interesting to see. It appears like the ball is really in the court of the city commission and the city attorney, to be more specific. And, you know, we'll see how this gets played in terms of bringing this before the city and having them vote on it. And, you know, again, there's a split on the city commission among a couple of different factions. So we'll see if one of these groups maybe sees this as an opportunity to score some points by trying to get these ordinances in front of people and to have a discussion. Now, the last thing that I definitely am going to follow up on is we've reported on this with these elected officials of recouping attorney fees before a complaint even becomes legally sufficient. And so, in other words, it's just some frivolous complaint is filed, an elected official runs out and hires an attorney and bills the city for $5,000. Now, you know, I'm going to have to do a little research on this, but I think that this should be, you know, paying back legal fees should be more of a discussion about when you hired the lawyer, when did you feel like you were at risk and you needed a lawyer, because a lot of these things, well, I think from what our guests told us, they were both dismissed before they were even found legally sufficient. Now, I know at the state level, you file a complaint, legally sufficient is a pretty big step, and then you have the investigation, and then you become, the next step is probable cause. So to hire a lawyer before anything is even legally sufficient, I think is something that the Independent Ethics Board needs to look at trying to put some kind of clause in. I mean, ultimately, it comes up to the city commission, because they're the ones that voted to pay the legal bills for their peers, and nobody asked a question about, well, did you hire this attorney before the complaint was even legally sufficient? So, anyway, that's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on. All right, well, listen, thanks for tuning in today. I hope you learned a little bit about the ethics process and what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it. You know, it can get in the weeds, and I think we got some good basic information out for you and let you know what the city commission is having to deal with. So have a good weekend, and we will be back here on Tuesday next week. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.